Hey there, and welcome back to another episode of Control Alt Asher. I'm Tobias, and I'm back again with Yussi. What's up?
Hey, Tobias. I am preparing for the summer. So it's mid-April now, and it's snowing in Helsinki, so it doesn't feel like summer is approaching. But as part of this, I'm finding stuff around the corners of the house. Nothing unpacked since we moved in about 2 years ago, but stuff that I put away that I figured, let me get back to this when I have more time. And I've come to the sad realization that once you approach the ripe age of 50, which I will be in 3 years from now, you start to realize that perhaps that Lego Millennium Falcon that you purchased a couple of years ago is never going to assemble itself together. And even if it will, I will never have the space to put it into, because it does require about 1 square meter of solid space. So happily sort of minimizing the stuff around the house, one step at a time. How about for you?
Okay, so first question, did you get rid of the Lego Millennium Falcon now that you realize you're probably never going to use it?
Not yet. I put it up for sale on the local eBay. Zero calls so far, so I'm feeling hopeful. Somebody will call me and get it off my hands.
One day. All right. On my side, I replanted my cucumbers, because I think I mentioned in a couple episodes, I do harvesting and growing every year. I cultivate vegetables and herbs and all kinds of things, potatoes. So now I replanted my cucumbers that I planted as seeds in January. They're now very big. They're about a meter. And I put them in the outdoor greenhouse. It's pretty cold outside. And just like you mentioned, you had a, still winter. It was 18 degrees Celsius here last week, which is almost summer, which is really nice. And it was down to 7 degrees or so. And I thought it's not bad. It doesn't go below this now. And I put everything into the greenhouse. And then it went down to 0 degrees and started snowing here as well. I did not expect that, but hopefully there's a frost guard in the greenhouse, so I could keep a level 6-7 degrees in the greenhouse, even if it was snowing outside. So last year, I harvested about 250 cucumbers and about 200 tomatoes, and I do keep track. And this year, I'm planning to beat that. So hopefully, I can get to 300 cucumbers and at least 250 tomatoes. I am still sick of cucumbers since last year, but it's a lot of fun. So hopefully we can give away a lot of veggies this year as well. But it's a fun project.
I can imagine when you gather for dinner on a nice Saturday, you go like, this is cucumber number 57. Let's enjoy this. Tomorrow it will be 58. Alrighty, today we are talking about understanding Entra SSE. So this is a bunch of a few different services, and I have quick notes here because I cannot memorize this. We will be talking about Entra Security Service Edge, which is Entra SSE. And as part of that, we have Entra Private Access, Entra Internet Access, and all of these sort of align with Microsoft SASE. How would you pronounce this? SASE?
SASE, I think.
Secure Access Service Edge. But like, nobody tells you I'm using Microsoft SQL Server. It's SQL Server. So this is Microsoft SASE, Secure Access Service Edge. How does this resonate with you, Toby? Are you super deep into all of these and super familiar with SSE and SASE and private and internet access?
You know what? This is going to be a real educational episode because I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. So I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions probably and figure out along the way what this is. I understand Entra Private Access, Entra Internet Access. I've taken a look at some of these things, but I actually never took a look at Entra Security Service Edge or Entra SSE. So that's going to be interesting to hear more about. And also Microsoft SASE, or however you wanted to pronounce that, the Secure Access Service Edge. I'm not intimately familiar with any of those things at this point in time. So that's going to be interesting. But let's back up the tape a little bit. What is Entra SSE, just to kind of start defining that?
So my understanding on this one, and the sort of the marketing brand and the services have been available for about 6-7 months now, maybe. So Entra SSE is the marketing brand that includes Entra Private Access and Entra Internet Access. So I feel when companies are starting to look into private access and internet access, they're looking into Entra SSE as a sort of functionality. And based on what capabilities they're deploying eventually, they will be deploying subsets of Entra SSE. So to sort of approach these two services, I think we've mentioned this a couple of times in the past already, and with almost 5 years of the podcast, I think we've mentioned everything, at least partially, in the past. But when we consider briefly what we had in the distant past, you had LAN, the local area network. Toby, I know you had LANs at home. You did LAN weekends with friends playing Unreal. But do you still talk about the concept of a local area network?
Not in that sense. No, that's probably a decade and a half ago that we actually designed or set up anything like a LAN. Maybe even 2 decades. I'm not actually sure. I mean, they're a part of everything we do, right? A local area network in some sense. But we don't design a LAN anymore. It's just, you know, internal network. And then it comes with a million extra guardrails today than what we used to have. I just recall when you had a LAN, it was everyone was on the network. If you were on the network, you were kind of considered trusted. So not zero trust. It's more like trust everyone.
Yeah, agreed. I recall in the 1990s, you had a free Windows-based application called The Little Brother. I'm not sure if it exists any longer. But you could run that on a typical workstation in your local network. And it would just pick up all the packages or the packets it would see in the network and visualize what's happening, who's talking to what applications are people using, is there anything that's not encrypted within the network, and it would show you everything. And that really opened my eyes at the time that, okay, everything I have in the network, I can sniff. Everything I have here, I can see. So back in the day, we had LAN, local area network. Then we needed a way for publishing and exposing select services for select partners, external partners. This was before Entra ID. This was before we had the B2B guests or external identity providers. So the DMZ, the demilitarized zone, was used to expose services. You would firewall that off from your LAN. You would firewall that off from the public internet. I've spent so much time figuring out the firewall rules, the routing, how do we provide authentication since our Active Directory is in the LAN? Do we want to expose that to the DMZ, or do we set up a separate Active Directory setup for the DMZ for partners? How do internal services go there? How do we do trusts? That was painful, but at the same time, it was also the only way to do it at the time. I don't think either of us are seeing DMZs any longer. Would you agree?
Yeah, that was when we designed like SharePoint solutions and SharePoint architectures back in the day, again, a decade, maybe a decade and a half ago. We'd see things like that, you know, set up a bunch of servers, a bunch of farms, as they call them on SharePoint. And, you know, some of them needed to be within the DMZ and some of them with outside of the DMZ and, you know, stuff like that. I haven't seen that in a very long time. But then again, I started working with the cloud exclusively in around 2008 to 2010. And from that point, most of my kind of work was focused on cloud-based services. So I haven't been designing any of those kind of local networks that required that type of architecture.
Same for me. It's been at least 10, maybe 12 years ago since I last had to sort of focus on a DMZ setup. And then lastly, we have the wide area network where you trust no one. That would be the public internet. Only bad guys there. Do not trust anything. Nothing goes unencrypted in there. And whatever comes in only comes to the DMZ. So LAN, DMZ, WAN, those were the typical sort of network layers or segments at the time. Your identities would be internal, typically Active Directory or something similar, and users would be bound to the local internal network in order to access file shares or printers or Wi-Fi or whatever. So this doesn't really work any longer. And what I'm often seeing with companies is that they sort of fix the problem by enforcing a VPN client on the workstation. So when you're not at the office, you would be enforced to open up a VPN connectivity back to the local area network or the DMZ. And from there, you would get to Microsoft 365 and Azure and the public internet. But at least we could control what is happening within that connection. But this is tricky as well, because now you're centralizing the connectivity and you have to maintain that as well. And identities are really everywhere. EntraID, Google, Microsoft accounts, Facebook accounts, and so on. Have you ever calculated or tallied how many accounts are you using? Or do you just have a single account in EntraID and everything happens through there?
So that's a great question. Like for work stuff, I have a single account. When I was, you know, running a smaller company or when I was a consultant, I had multiple work accounts because many of the clients required you to have their domain work accounts, you know, tied to their domain, and, you know, a bunch of conditional access policies applied to that specific account. So in the past, I used to have a bunch of more identities. But then again, you know, looking beyond just the scope of work and Azure specifically, I have all my identities in a password manager. There's a load of them. Like I use my Google account to sign into some things. I use my Microsoft accounts to sign into some things. And I use my Twitter account or X account to sign into some things. So it's, you know, high and low. I use different identities to sign into different things, including work services, you know, of different kinds or things that might relate to work, like educational sites or whatever it is, somewhere I need to sign in and access my profile. So I think you're right there. You know, in the past, you might have one identity or a username and password. Now you have identities, and these are tied to everything that you do online, pretty much. There's a million different identity providers, but I think you already mentioned the common ones. It's like AAD or EntraID, Google, Meta, Facebook, Microsoft accounts. You have AWS if you use that type of cloud. And yeah, all of these identities are identities that I use for different purposes. So I don't think there is one username, password, or one identity that people use, and then that's final. I still think you need to have many of them. And I recall we talked in a couple of episodes as well that identity is the kind of new firewall or like the perimeter security. Just touching on the history here, when you mentioned LAN, WAN, and DMZ, you know, all these things reminds me also that with the shift of zero trust and, you know, adopting a mindset of shifting left with security and all these things, identity also became the kind of perimeter security as opposed to firewall. Because as soon as you were inside the firewall, you would have a lot of access to a lot of things. We can't do that anymore. So if you get inside the firewall, you still cannot do anything if you kind of adopted the right zero trust mindset and, you know, make sure that there's no lateral movement once you actually bypass a firewall. For whatever reason, you might be able to do that. But we're not going to talk about that. Yes, identities are everywhere. I do agree. That's my final answer.
For me, it's more or less the same. A couple of primary work accounts and then a bunch of other accounts that I use in different services that do not, for one reason or another, do not support single sign-on with my work account. And not everything is connected to work either. So users are roaming everywhere. They are at the office, they are at the summer cabin, they are at the cafe, they are visiting a customer. They are not tied to a physical location any longer. So the identity has to float with the user. And I still, quite often, I would say at least once a month, I am in a meeting or a mail thread where there's some sort of a service we need to integrate to. A SQL database, an API, something similar. And we are building an integration for that. And whoever is maintaining that service is telling that, alrighty, in order for you to have access to this one that we're providing, I would need your source IP address. Which IP address are you coming from? So we can open that access in the firewall. I'm like, well, hold up. We are not coming from a workstation. We are coming from a cloud service. So we might be using Microsoft Fabric or Power BI directly or Logic Apps or what have you. And then they go, yeah, just give us the IP addresses. I'm like, well, okay. And I've got the XML file with all of the Azure IP address ranges, and I can do a quick search with generative AI from there and produce a list of 70,000 unique IP addresses or ranges and say, well, here we go. And then you typically get the response back, well, we cannot do this. It has to be a single IP. And then you sort of go, well, yeah, we did this in 2005, but we've moved beyond this one. We've moved beyond singular IP addresses as the sort of way to restrict access, just like we've moved away from singular identities being managed internally. So with this, we get to securing the edge. And for the longest of times, I feel Microsoft, when they were talking about the edge, they sort of meant the IoT devices. Like, yeah, you have your DMZ, but then just on the edge of that, you have something that's gathering data. But for now, the edge is sort of all the edges when you're looking from the cloud. So we need to secure the identities, we need to secure the endpoints, meaning the devices, the local networks, and everything in between. And didn't we do a couple of episodes already on zero trust, maybe a year ago or so, because that was all the rage at the time. And it's sort of, it's not the same thing, but it's parallel to what we're talking about with Entra SSE.
Yeah, we did talk about that a couple of times, and I brushed on it, you know, briefly just now. You know, you have the least privilege, verify explicitly, assume breach, and all of these things make sense when you just said what you said. And we talked about, again, LAN, WAN, DMZ, and, you know, the shift to having identities everywhere and identities being a new type of perimeter. Everything comes down to the mindset here that, you know, assume that everything inside the firewall is a threat still. Assume breach. And that's where we need to verify all identities explicitly. Just because the identity is being used inside the firewall doesn't mean you can trust it. So I think all of these things are just part of the kind of the cloud design patterns we see today. I don't think there's anyone building a cloud solution today or setting up a new company or establishing, you know, identities in Entra as an example, saying, hey, we don't need to add additional security measures, because as long as we enable the firewall on our device and servers, we're going to be fine. Nobody says that. You know, there's a lot of different checks you have to do to ensure that you really secure things. And thankfully, that's where Defender for Cloud comes in, and you know, all the security.microsoft.com portal can come in and do a lot of stuff for you there. We did take a look at something relevant to that, which is the, what's it called, security exposure management, something like that. We took a look at in the previous episode, which also touches on the identities you have and, you know, if there's any gaps, you know, do you have a global admin account? Should you have that? Probably not. Maybe you need to figure that out. And yeah, just a you know, Microsoft is pushing guidance and pushing portals to really help you strengthen the security around identities. But I feel I'm just repeating myself now when I say that, but it is it is important to understand that the mindset shift, I think.
So now that we sort of understand the past a little bit better and in sort of in the context of zero trust, with Entra SSE, you have the private access and you have internet access. And the naming is, I wouldn't say it's off, but it took me a little while to sort of internalize that private access means that your employees, your users, your devices will get access to the office and remote networks when they are probably working remotely. And internet access is access to public-facing internet services, so software as a service capabilities like ServiceNow and Salesforce and Zendesk and what have you. But internet access also includes Microsoft 365. So when you're connecting to with Outlook to Exchange Online or using Teams to get files from SharePoint and whatnot, then you would be utilizing Entra internet access. And even though there's two different services. The whole setup happens through the modern Entra portal. So you have to go to entra.microsoft.com. And from there, you have something called the Global Secure Access. So Entra SSE, I feel, is the marketing brand. The individual capabilities are private access and internet access. But the admin interface is Global Secure Access that ties together private access and internet access. Does this make sense?
Right. So from the Global Secure Access, from entra.microsoft.com, from that portal, that's where you manage the traffic, you know, from this endpoint to here. We should allow this type of traffic and, just to, like you say, the admin interface. I think that makes sense. Is that from where you can set up different private and internet access routes as well or configurations? Is that happening from the same place?
Yeah. So everything happens through here. And if we start with private access first, so this is securing access when you're not at the office, or if you have multiple remote networks. Perhaps you have a physical office, perhaps you have remote networks in a co-location or in a remote data center. You can then build access to all of these remote networks so that your employees and people can work with whatever they need. So perhaps you have a Windows 11 laptop that is outside the office, no VPN, of course, and now they need to connect with a file share, which is physically within the HQ office. So Entra private access, you would then utilize this one. And if you're sort of thinking that, well, hold up, Entra private access, this sounds awfully familiar to what used to be called Azure AD application proxy. And yes, the client has bits and pieces of Azure AD application proxy as well. And the whole idea with that was that it would build the tunnel back to your client and then pipe the traffic through the tunnel. So in a way, I would say Entra private access is relatively simple to set up because you need the connectors within the networks that are exposing the services through Entra and Entra ID and Entra Global Secure Access for your clients to connect back to. So in that sense, when I set this up initially, I felt, well, Entra private access is more like an enterprise approach to application proxy. And obviously there's additional capabilities, but the sort of the core functionality would be that one.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I'm getting excited to go and try these new capabilities out and, you know, try the admin interface a little bit for, I do have a couple of tenants where I use Entra ID. And I haven't had a chance to take a look at these angles yet, but it's always interesting to dabble a little bit with that. So I might just take the time to try this out because I do have a couple of minor use cases on the family side of a couple of things we've got running where this could make sense to try out to secure some devices and secure some, well, specifically the private access would be what I would be looking for. But yeah, that's interesting. What else do we need to know about Entra SSE or about this? I figure there's probably something around pricing. There's probably something around any of that. If you're using Entra ID today, what do you need to know about Entra SSE? Is there anything else we should know about?
Yeah, a couple of points. So Entra private access, I would say it's a centralized way to publish internal networks and services for your people. And Entra Internet Access is a centralized way to control more of the traffic as it goes to the public internet. So there's a secure web gateway that you can use to force or proxy all of the traffic through, and then perhaps utilize stuff like Defender for Cloud Apps on top of that. And again, this sounds awfully similar to conditional access in Entra ID, and it's based on something called the universal conditional access. Pricing. This is super easy. It's not released yet. So what you need is Entra ID P1 license for users, and that's for the conditional access primarily. But beyond that, what will the pricing be? Will it be per connection per month, per user per month, per minutes, or something else? We don't know yet. I'm expecting something by build timeframe. So build is in the latter half of May 2024. I'm hopeful we'll get something. I don't know, but I'm expecting. And perhaps then we'll know if this is something we could start building on. It's still in preview. And for the preview, some of the downsides are that in order to build the managed traffic between your devices and your services and networks, this is only supported on Windows and Android. No support for iOS, no support for macOS, no support for Linux. And I would imagine they're building on that one, but they're not available in the preview yet. So if you want to test this out, for Windows and Android, you can test stuff. But for anything more exotic, like macOS and Linux, you'll have to wait a bit to get those bits.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. And that's a good footnote as well, because I know a lot of folks are using macOS. I think you're using macOS on your main device as well. So you would then have to boot up a VM in Windows on your Mac. It would have to boot up a Windows VM and then use that to connect, if at all.
Yeah, and if somebody is thinking, well, hold up again, I'm using a Windows or a MacBook with macOS. We've got Intune for device management. We've got Defender for endpoint to secure everything on the devices. We've got amazing log ingestion with Sentinel, and we're looking at Defender for cloud apps, and we're using Defender for cloud and security exposure management. We've got the whole thing set up. Why would we need this? And I would say, well, perhaps this is the last link, especially if your users are roaming quite a bit away from the office, and you want to ensure they have secure access to whatever data in Microsoft 365, Azure, someplace else, or on-premises, without needing a VPN tunnel that you terminate to Azure and then route manually from there. You get the tunneling, the sort of micro tunnels automatically built, especially for Microsoft 365, without needing express route. So I feel the value definitely is for Microsoft 365 workloads, especially. But then if you have a lot of stuff in on-premises, it makes sense as well, if you can get rid of the sort of legacy VPN clients and setups for that. But again, we don't know the exact pricing yet. Let's revisit this topic when we know the final pricing and when we see the iOS, macOS, and Linux capabilities are supported as well. Then I would see this is something we could actually deploy. Now we can fiddle around with this, but we cannot really deploy this in practice. And I'm hoping the pricing will be great so I could deploy this to everybody in my team and we could actually get hands-on experience on how this really performs in real life.
Yeah, that sounds good. I did not have any clue about Entra SSE before this episode started. I do have a little bit better understanding now, high level, about what it is and where I need to go take a look. And I think, and correct me if I'm not right here, Entra.microsoft.com, that's pretty much where I need to go to start figuring out and see, the capabilities. And then also to access this global secure access client that you mentioned, to see and control the endpoints and whatever you have.
Yeah, that is enough. You have to be a global admin or a global secure access admin or within those roles in order to configure this. So if you have a test tenant, just go in there, make sure you have P1 license somehow for that user. Then you can set the whole thing up and you can set the whole lab in Azure as well, because that's what I'm building. I don't really need to have anything in on-premises, but I can try that too if you can spin up a VM. But that's about it. Let's revisit this for sure. I'd say 6 months from now, we know a lot more in practice how this works. I don't have anything else. I think we have the unexpected question left. And Toby, based on my bookkeeping, it is your turn to come up with the unexpected question.
Okay, so I've been fiddling with this one. If you had to give a TED talk on something that you know absolutely nothing about, what would it be and how would you start?
Yeah, it would be interesting. No. For me, I was just checking the the small LCD display I have on my blender in my kitchen. It's 1,999 smoothies that we've made in our household in the past 8 years or so that we've had it. So I know absolutely nothing about how to make a healthy smoothie that tastes great. I know how to make a healthy smoothie that's absolutely awful, and I know how to make a super nice smoothie, but it's not healthy anymore. So I would probably start with the statistics on the blender runtime, and then what ingredients to put in, and hope for the best.
All right. Yeah, that's a good answer. I'm looking forward to your TED Talk.
Sounds good. Alrighty. Thanks for tuning in. See you next week.
All right. See you then.